We're now 2 weeks into the Welsh Premier League season, and after a poor opening day, the Robins are flying. A 3-1 win at Bangor on Saturday, giving their first victory at Nantes, their first victory of the season, and they're up and running for the season now. And in a special Robins radio tonight here at Latham Park, we have a very special guest. A man who pays close attention to the league. He's played over 580 games in the Football League. He's got 36 Welsh caps. He's managed in Greece, Spain and England. And he's with us here tonight. A very warm welcome to Chris Coleman. Thanks for coming down to Mid Wales to see us, Chris. Much appreciated. And I'm sure a lot of the viewers are looking forward to hearing your views on the league. We've got a new setup here, Chris, at Latham Park. New 3G, new surroundings. How are you impressed by the new pitch?
Yeah, I think it's great. I was here a year or two ago for the World Cup final, and I watched Carmarthen beat TNS on penalties, and the pitch was obviously not in great condition. And I think when you've got a 3G pitch, as we see tonight, there's some youngsters down there having a kick about, and it's great for the community also. It's good for the first team, because a Newtown Football Club, they're not going to get games cancelled, and there's nothing worse as a player when you train all week and you can't play at the weekend, or even you can't train because the weather's so bad. So I think, yeah, for the Welsh Premier League and for the community here, the 3G pitch is more than welcome.
Just looking at the Welsh Premier League, really, Chris, you were at the Welsh Cup final at the back end of last season. It was a great spectacle of a game, 3-2 over TNS. How impressed were you by the talent on show?
Yeah, I've watched quite a lot of the Welsh League, and I think TNS, I've said before, like the style of play, their philosophy. And okay, I think financially they're the strongest team, and they've got the strongest team in terms of quality. And I think, you know, they're good to watch also. So, you know, they're a good team. There's other good teams also, and I do think the Premier League is improving. Any league can improve. Any team, any player, there's always room for improvement. But I was pleasantly surprised when I took the job and I started watching Welsh League football. Yeah, it's not where it can be, and it can get better, of course, but still I've seen some good stuff.
Is it something sort of you pay a keen interest in? I know you've got your commitment to the national side, but is it something that you do look at? Do you watch the Welsh League on a regular basis when you're not with the national squad?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was nice to listen to TalkSport a while back, and Alan Brazil was speaking on TalkSport and praising the Welsh League, saying praise in Wales for having its own identity in the Welsh League, the Welsh Premier League. So it's something we should be proud of. And it gets knocked and it gets criticised like everything. But you know, we are trying to improve it on every level. And I think that will happen. You know, there's a lot of passion, a lot of belief down there. There's a lot of commitment going into running the clubs, making sure the league's run properly, the games are run properly. And like anything, it needs finance. And at the moment, you know, finance is tight in most places. But nevertheless, I do believe the Welsh League will get better.
A lot of national teams, you know, there's a lot of players, you know, smaller nations like Wales, there's a lot of players that come from the National League. Is it alarming for you that there's not only no players in the National League in the main team, there's none in the 21s either? Is that an alarming thing, or is that just, you know, a course of nature, it's always going to be that way?
It'd be alarming for me if there was a lot of players playing in the Welsh League fighting for positions in our national team, because if we're serious about qualifying for a major championship, a World Cup or a European championship, our players, the Welsh players, have got to be playing at the highest level.
But in sort of a different scenario, do you feel there'll ever be a day where there's a player from this league who does push for the national team, or do you think that's, you know, that's a far distant sort of in the future?
Well, we had I think Barry Lloyd a while back, Gary Lloyd.
Gary Lloyd from Barrytown.
Yeah. And he played in the same squad as me, Gary. And he was playing for Barrytown. But I think, look, the way I look at it, it can be done, but the players from the Welsh League, I think, have got to go through the system.
Yeah.
They've got to go and play at a higher level and keep climbing.
Yeah.
To come from the Welsh Premier League into the Welsh national team, there's a lot of levels in between. So,
but can you see the day the Welsh Premier League rises and people do challenge, or is that, you know, is that something you want?
I think that'll be if that is going to happen, and it'll be tough. I think it'll be a long time in the future. Yeah, that's a lot of hard work, an incredible investment in terms of, you know, financial investment,
And I think that'll be a long time in the future.
I'm just looking at sort of the league as a whole. The league sort of structure comes under a lot of scrutiny. From your position as sort of national team manager, do you look at the 12-team format and think it's wrong or it's right, or do you think it should be there should be more teams to challenge in the league? Or?
I think that if you look at Scotland, I think we can liken up the Welsh Premier League to Scotland in terms of there's not a lot of teams in the Premier League in Scotland. It's been questions for years, and the way it gets broken down halfway through the season, and the way they do it there, everybody plays each other four times. And again, you know, that's been criticised. But I think the way the Welsh Premier League is being run, like I said earlier, it can improve. Is that the way improve the amount of teams that are played in the Premier League? I can't give you an honest answer to say that'll make it better or worse. I don't know, because again, the finance comes into it, and sometimes a team, you know, a guy that's got a job and is playing Welsh Premier League football, who's playing down in the south of Wales, if he's playing in the north of Wales on the Saturday, he's working Friday night, or he may be working on a Saturday. I think we've got to look at the compass as well, and the travelling comes into it, and it's never easy. I think we, rather than just saying, right, it should be bigger, it can't be any smaller, I don't think, it should be bigger. I think there's a lot of things that needs to be looked at to see what's doable for the teams. But I think as soon as you say it's just 12 teams, it's only 12 teams, I think people think, well, they lose a bit of interest. They play each other too many times or whatever. I think it can be looked at. What's the best outcome? I don't know. But I think, like I said earlier, anything can improve. Even the English Premier League can improve. The Welsh Premier League can improve. Is it to make it bigger? I think that's a conversation to be had.
Some of the players in the league don't like the system. Just talking theoretically, if you were a player, would you enjoy playing in it? Or?
I prefer to have more variety. As a player, you want to play against the. I was used to playing in the professional league where there's a lot more teams. You play 46 games. If you're in the Premier League, obviously you play less, but there's more teams.
There's someone who said to me. Once before, who's played across the board in England. A bit more spice when you go to sort of away games. You only play them once a season, whereas I think for Bangor and Rill, they played each other about 8 times last season.
I can't agree with that. I can't agree with two teams playing each other 8 times. I don't agree with that. I think that is definitely something that needs to be looked at. 4 times is hard enough. 8 times, you know, that's too much.
Yeah. With the sort of system, do you feel the league, the standards is improving year on year? Do you feel players are getting better?
Like I say, Airbus done well. I watched them in Europe earlier on in the season. They had to play the game at Bangor. But they done well. They should have won the game, really. They played against a decent Norwegian team who were better on paper. But Bangor under Andy Priest and Jock Morrison, they were very well organised, and they had the tactics right on the night, and they couldn't nick the game, which would have been a great win for them. So I was impressed with Airbus. I've watched Bangor quite a few times. And I mentioned in the teams who are the strongest in the league, but that's what you have to aim for. You know, it's like us with the first team. We've got Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey and some top players. It's not that we concentrate on them, but we say there's the level. You know, how many of us, I include myself, can get to the highest level that we possibly can work at, and that's what we have to look at. It's the same in the Welsh Premier League.
With 3G pitches, as you said, we were talking about it before, previous to the programme. TNS have got one, Newtown have got one, Aber are looking at one, Airbus have got one. At this standard, I think a lot of people think they're good. You said, obviously, I think you said in a couple of papers and in the press a few months back, you weren't in favour of them with a game coming up on 3G, but for this level, it's got to be a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, because I think in the lower leagues it's hard. Finance always comes into it, it's as simple as that. And if you haven't got a good playing surface and your games are getting cancelled, you can't train, you can't play, and in the end people lose interest. Whereas if you're on a surface where you're guaranteed to play, guaranteed to train, that's what it's all about. I think the higher you go, you know, especially at the top level and in international level, it's different. Players are used to playing on top grass pitches, and they're training on top grass pitches, and when the game comes round, the pitches are fantastic. Nowadays in the Premier League and the Championship, you look at the pitches in the last game of the season, and they look like a pitch in the first game of the season 15 years ago when everything's lush and fantastic, because they've got the finances to make sure they look after the pitches. If you haven't got that, then, you know, initially it's a big outlay to have a new 3G pitch, but I think in the long run, for clubs in the Welsh Premier League, it's more fruitful. It's brilliant for the community. They've got somewhere for the kids to train on and for the local teams, and you get more use out of it, so it's a plus.
As you spoke about then, you praised Airbus's performance in Europe. I think they missed out by a goal in the end. Teams in Wales do tend to be doing better at the moment. What's your sort of view on that as a national boss? Are you pleased that teams are progressing a little bit better?
I am. It's not just on the pitch where there's improved in Wales. It's off the pitch in terms of coaching as well and managing. I think there's improved. I mentioned Andy Priest and John Morrison at Airbus, and TNS have done really, really well, you know, with Craig and Carl. They play great football. I watched, we're talking about the Welsh Cup final. You expect TNS really to beat Aberystwyth. But on the day, Aberystwyth tactically were very, very good. They played counter-attack, could have beaten TNS. It was only in the last 10 minutes that TNS came to life. But before that, Aberystwyth were excellent. Tactically, they were fantastic. Set up really well. So I think the coaches and the managers in the Welsh Premier League are getting better, and that's important.
In terms of teams in Europe, TNS owner Mike Harris, he spoke, I think it was the end of last season, about targeting group stages of Europe. Do you feel that's possible for teams in Wales in the current climate, or is that another sort of pipe dream?
Well, you've got to have a target and you've got to have an objective. It won't be easy to do that. Maybe a club like TNS will have the best chance. Again, financial come into it. And the luck of the draw as well. When you look at what's happened in the Champions League with the game that took place with Celtic and Maribor, Celtic got out of jail. They got back into the competition. Everybody fancied them to beat Maribor. Maribor turned them over 1-0 and they've gone through. So, you know, we've seen big upsets in football. We've seen teams, you know, we've seen dreams coming true. There's no reason why it can't, but, you know, it is rare.
Just moving on now, we'll move away from the Welsh League and talk a bit about the national side. Chris, you scored 4 goals in 36 appearances for Wales between 92 and 2002. Following that, you went on to a successful club managerial career. You took over from Gary Speed as the national boss in 2012. After a sort of a mixed start to your first qualifying campaign, there was wins over Austria, Scotland, and you come quite close to qualification, and you were leading against Croatia. It was a game I watched, thoroughly enjoyed, but you didn't qualify in the end. Just looking at the national side, Chris, this is probably something you get asked all the time, and probably all my listeners are going to want to know, how good is Gareth Bale?
Yeah, he's the best, I think.
The best you've ever managed?
The best I've ever managed, for sure. And I think he's better probably than people think he is. When you see him close up and you watch him training and some of the things he does. And I think this year as well, he's had 12 months under his belt playing for Real Madrid, and there's more pressure playing for Real Madrid. There's more pressure on him because he's the most expensive player in history. And he's playing for the biggest club on the planet. And he's dealt with it, remarkably well. And they've won the Champions League, you know, that says everything. So, but I think he's a more mature boy for his time in Spain. I went to see him last week, watched him in a few of the games, watched him training. Had a bit of dinner with him after their first league win against Cordoba. They won 2-0 at the Bernabeu. Yeah, he was in good spirits. He's excited about the new campaign. But he's a terrific player, absolutely fantastic player.
On sort of like a day-to-day basis, when you meet up for Wales sort of training camps, as a professional, what is he like? Is he, you know, is he down to earth?
Quiet, yeah. Undemanding, quiet. He's got his own one or two little things that he likes to do. In terms of, it's because you have to imagine when we, Wales, as much as we try to get it like it is at clubs, all our players from all different clubs, they have all different way of preparing. We have a certain way to prepare the players that we think is best for them before a game. But we can't be that demanding of them because they do the same thing week in, week out at their clubs, and that's what their body's used to. But in general, all our lads, you know, they're fantastic, great attitudes. We never have problems with them. And Bailey's the same as the rest.
So the tag of the world's most expensive player hasn't gone to his head. He's still like one of the lads.
That's never gone to his head. He's never come and demanded anything special from us that, you know, we don't deliver for the rest of the players. But he's from a very grounded family. His mum and dad, lovely people, Frank and Debbie. I was with them last week at the night before the Super Cup in Cardiff, and we had dinner at an event, and they're lovely people, very, very down to earth. And obviously that's where Gareth gets it from. And if you're of that mentality, and the top players anyway, most of the top players, they have a lot of humility. And Gareth has that. So, you know, that's a good trait.
Is it a boost sort of for the rest of the squad? You know, they're playing now with the world's most expensive player. Does that give them a boost every time they go into training? Say, you know, you've got someone who's a young lad who's coming maybe from a League One side. Does it give him a boost if he's playing alongside someone who plays for Real Madrid?
Well, I think when you've got someone in your team that's got the capacity to score a goal or make a goal out of nothing, and you know the opposition know that, and they're, before you walk on the pitch, they're nervous about that, you're already on the front foot. I played at Blackburn, and I did the same with a player called Alan Shearer, who everybody remember. We knew he was going to score a goal every game, and if you've got that in your dressing room and in your team, you know that's a big, big positive. But the other players have got their own identities, and they play their own game, and they play their strengths, like Bailey plays to his strengths, and you combine all that together collectively. Wales, we play to our strengths, and we try and get the blend right.
Just moving on now from Gareth Bale, looking at the national side, he took over in 2012 after the unfortunate death of Gary Speed. Speed sort of took the side from strength to strength when he took over, and so sort of how tough was it to take over and sort of adapt? Because I know Gary Speed was a close friend of yours. I remember watching the first game you took the side. So how sort of tough was that? Not just to take your own national side, but to take it on the back of what had happened.
Yeah, I think the truth is I never really took the team in the first probably 8 months. My head was probably somewhere else. And I said before, I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. I was kind of working the way I thought Speeds had been working. And, you know, that's never good for the players, because players are not daft. And they have to believe in what you're saying. And if you don't believe in what you're saying, they're not going. First 8 months was really tough. But, you know, after that, and we'll never forget Speeds, and I'll never forget, you know, that time for everybody was unbelievably tough. And, you know, you can't measure it against anything else, because we've never been in that situation. It was like a horror movie, really. And at the same time, we've got a job to do, and we've tried to get on with that. And we've done, of late, we're very, very, it's very good for us. The FIFA rankings have come out, and we know we're in a great position, quite high up there. That's going well. We've lost one in the last five, and that was away to Holland, where we played very, very well with a depleted team, and the players who come in, they did fantastic. Same when we played away to Belgium, when we played Macedonia home, we had, I think, 14 players out, and the lads who come in did fantastic for us. So it's very positive at the minute. And we like it, because we're almost going under the radar. That's what you want, really. You know, you want to do the talking on the pitch. New campaign, new challenges, good young team. This, people are talking about this is going to be the best chance for us to qualify. In terms of the format, yes, because it's 24 teams, and the format's different. But the players we've got, and the age they are, and the way they're developing and maturing, this will be a good Welsh team for some years to come, I believe. And I think this campaign, a little bit of luck, I think we can do something special and do something that no one else has ever done. I believe in the players are good enough. I believe they're good enough. We need a little bit of luck, that's all. And if we get that, I think it'll be a memorable campaign.
Just looking back to when you first took the job, you said it affected you for the first sort of 8 months. Did it have an effect on sort of senior players, the likes of Craig Bellamy, who played with Gary Speed for a long time? Did it affect them?
I think it affected everybody. It affected the nation, you know, not just the football nation. It affected everybody. Wales, England, Ireland, everybody knew who Gary Speed was, and we all admired him for his career. And I was lucky, I'd known him from since he was 10. You know, we played against each other right the way through the youth. We were at Man City together on trial as kids. And we played all the way through the young Welsh teams and the national team together. And so I knew him a bit more personal than that, but it affected everybody, you know. And it was, it's not, you never get over it. You just have to deal with it, and you learn to deal with it a little bit better as time goes on. But it's not something you ever get over, something like that.
Was there ever a point in that 8 months where you thought you might walk?
I've never really turned the challenge down. I've never won every challenge I've gone for, but I've never turned it down. So it was one or two dark times, you know, where we come back after we were humiliated out in Serbia, and that was, you know, that was only my second game in the campaign, and you know, I think that was the line in the sand where I thought, right, no more of what I've been doing. I've got to start doing it differently. And it was good. We came back after the Serbia game. I had a cup of coffee with Ingwin Hughes around his house, and we had a good chat. And you know, after that, I think we improved, and I calmed down a little bit, I think, and I started looking at the job a bit differently. You know, since then, we haven't won every game since then, but I think we've made a steady improvement, certainly over the last half a dozen games. And I think people look at results, they don't look at what players are missing. We haven't got a huge pool of players anyway. We've got some special players. It's not just when we miss one or two of the special players. I don't care what team you are, what country you are, if you're missing 8 or 10 or 12 players from your squad, it's always going to be an uphill struggle. So, you know, that's been tough and frustrating, but I think I kind of know what's coming in the next campaign. I don't think I'm going to be lucky enough to pick a squad and that same squad's going to turn up and play in the game, our next game that we face with, because that's never happened yet. And that's international football. So we've got to grow on with that. But like I said, that people look at Rambo and Bailey and Ashley Williams and Joe Allen, and they tend to look at all the players who are playing for the big teams in the Premier League. We've got more talent than that. We've got players, you know, one or two playing outside of the Premier League. Some young players to come into it with no experience, but they've had a little bit, but they need more. But ability-wise, it's there. So, you know, our under-21s have got two games, Finland and I think it's Latvia. And if they win, they qualify. There's a lot of positives in Welsh football. Everything's judged on the first team. So if we do well in this campaign, I believe we'll be judged on that. But Welsh football is more than just the first team, you know, it's the next generation, and how the younger players doing and how they're coming through and how are we coaching them, you know, how are we training them, you know, across the board. What I see, I'm really pleased about and I'm positive about. So I think Welsh football have got some bright times ahead.
Like we spoke about Gareth Bale then, another one, Aaron Ramsey, you know, he suffered a horrific leg break, I think it was about 4 years ago now. Last season he was without doubt Arsenal's best player. How impressed have you been by his sort of rise? He's sort of come from nowhere in the last couple of
years. Well, he has. I think if he hadn't got injured when he did, he would have been pushing for player of the season, not just at Arsenal, in the Premier League. He's outstanding. I think he's matured a hell of a lot. He's more productive in possession. Positionally, he takes up better positions defensively. His understanding of the game and his, I think he bosses games. The games he's played for us, he's basically dictated the tempo of the game. You know, he's been that good. He's a superb player. He's an excellent player.
Just moving away from all that now, we're almost out of time here. We're just going to put you on the spot a bit, Chris. We're going to sort of do a bit of a 1-11. Who was your sort of the best players you played with? We'll start now. Who, going from goalkeeper, who's the best goalkeeper you ever played?
Damon Southall, by a country mile. He was at the time I played here, I think he was probably the best goalkeeper in the world. With his feet, fantastic with his feet. He'd have been brilliant for a team like Barcelona. Now Neville Southall. He used to join in the training in the five sides, and he'd be the best player. As a shot stopper, his anticipation was absolutely freakish at times. He was a far better goalkeeper than he gets credit for.
Yeah. Back four.
Back four, right. The best right back, are we saying the Welsh or my whole career?
Whole career.
All right, I'd say the best right back I played with was Steve Finnan, who came to Fulham. And later on he went to Liverpool, had a good career. The Republic of Ireland international. This is 1998, we signed him at Fulham, so it's over 15 years ago. A very offensive fullback. Good with the ball, good one-to-one defender, excellent professional. So he'd be my right back.
Centre-halves?
Centre backs, I played with a lot of good centre backs. I think probably the best, Henningberg at Blackburn was excellent. Norwegian international, obviously, Manchester United.
I saw something on TV the other day, Tim Sherwood had to do this as well, and he put Berg in there. He said he was exceptional.
Yeah, he was an exceptional player, very, very good player. I think, and then it's to be a fight. When I was at Blackburn, we had Colin Henry, who was an excellent centre back.
He was in there as well.
Yeah, he was an excellent centre back. But it was a young Ian Pearce who won the league with Blackburn.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely flying. A lot of big teams, Man United, Liverpool wanted to sign him.
To Fulham again.
Yeah, later on in his career, I signed him. But he'd had a serious injury at Blackburn when he was younger, and that stopped him a little bit. But he went on to play for West Ham and did well for Fulham. But I'll give Colin Henry the nod.
Henry the nod on that one. Left back?
Left back, Graham Rousseau.
Blackburn?
Yeah, that's three from Blackburn there. And to be fair, Tim Flowers was the goalkeeper, so, and he was outstanding. But that's how good Neville Southall was. But Graham Rousseau, again, like Steve Finn, an offensive full-back, great left foot. One-to-one defender, very good. Got forward, crossed loads of balls. Graham Rousseau, left back.
4-3-3 or a 4-4-2?
4-3-3.
4-3-3. Three in the middle?
I say 4-3-3. You know, most of the top teams, the only formation they play is when they kick off and in possession. They're all moving, they're all rotating. Without the ball, they all defend. That's what the best teams do. You can put 4-3-3. I'd put in midfield. I played with a lot of good midfield players. I think, talking about Tim Sherwood, he was the captain at Blackburn. He was a very, very good player. He could play holding or he could play offensive. So I put Tim in there. He was a very good player. I've got to put Speeds in there. 85 caps for Wales. Good captain. Great left foot. Unselfish player. And I just think for his contribution to football, I think he played over 800 games. His career went on for a long, long time. So I'd have to put Speeds in there. And I'd have, let's say, those two sitting. And in front of them, I'd have a player I played at Fulham with as a number 10. His name was Lee Clark, in the way I'd like to play. Clark, he never did a lot of defending, but he had a great last pass in him. And his knowledge and his understanding of where to be was exceptional. He had a great career at Newcastle and Sunderland and Fulham. So I put Clarke in there. I put Ian Rush at the top. I don't think I need to say too much about Rushy. Best timing or runs I've ever seen. And I just mentioned Alan Shearer, who I'm leaving out. So that's a huge call, but Rushy was different. I put Ryan Giggs.
I didn't see to play with.
Giggs, yeah, was the best player I played with. He was very similar to Bailey in terms of he can just turn the game on his head, brilliant with dead balls. You know, he defending at 1 minute and he last third, and in 5 seconds he's at the other end of the pitch scoring a goal on a counter attack. Amazing player, absolutely fantastic player. So you know. And we know about what he did at United and his career, but a fantastic, fantastic player. And a great example to... Problem with modern-day football is, I keep saying, there's too many average millionaires playing football, playing it for the wrong reason. And it's solely for money. You look at Ryan Giggs, he probably could have retired if he wanted to at 20. You know, he's probably a rich man then, but he wasn't in it for that. He's in it to win things and to get better, and because he loves football. And he's a great example to any young kid. For doing it for the right reasons. On the right, player I played with at Swansea, played for Wales, played for Southampton, played in the great Swansea City team that was promoted, played for Leeds. His name's Alan Curtis, who could play on the right or play in behind. When I played against him, I couldn't get the ball off him. His anticipation and his balance, you go on the right off his left. Incredible dribbler with the ball. He was an amazing player. And I played with a lot of good players. Mark Hughes, Ian Wright, I've already mentioned Alan Shearer. Dean Saunders was a fantastic striker. But I think if one, I'd probably, that would be the team I'd go with.
So you've already said that Giggs was the best player you ever played with. Who was the best manager you ever played under?
Best manager, the most I learnt from was a Frenchman called John Tagana. I learnt more from him in terms of the whole philosophy, how to train and play, and the training match what you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I played with one or two managers that we train one way, we play another, it was pointless.
Any names?
No names. You'd be surprised. So, in terms of his message being the same, having continuity from training into the game, I'm talking, this is 1999 or 2000, way ahead of his time.
Do you think he was sort of a bit of a catalyst for, you know, because he was one of the first, I know there's foreign managers before Wenger and people like that, but he, you know, he was one of the things, and he had a good spell at Fulham as well.
Yeah, very good. He got us promoted. We had the best team. Let's get it right. In that championship, we had the best team. In 2000, we signed John Collins from Everton for $3 million. Louis Sahar came from Metz for $2.5 million. We already had Lee Clark playing. Steve Finnan was already there, signed by Kevin Keegan.
Marley was after, that was a year later.
This was in the championship. And we had a lot of international players playing in the championship in the first team. But it's how he moulded us, how he worked us in training, what our nutrition, our rest, trained twice a day, sometimes in pre-season, three times a day. It was unheard of. He was an innovator. It's the type of football we played. We played that, the free-flowing football you see Swansea City play, and now we were doing that in 2000 with Fulham and the John Tagana. He was way ahead of his time. So I learned the most from him.
And just to finish off now, we're almost out of time. In football, you know, you've played for a lot of clubs. What was your biggest achievement?
My biggest achievement, I think, was playing for Wales. Because I always dreamt of playing for Swansea City and playing for Wales when I was a kid, and I was lucky enough to do both. And what I did at clubs, I won some championships at different clubs and won the league at different clubs, but nothing matched playing for Wales and winning for Wales. That was my biggest achievement, and that was my most memorable. Every time I think of big memories, special memories, it was mainly playing for Wales. Didn't matter who it was against either.
What was your favourite game? Any standout games when you were at Wales?
I get asked that a lot round when we travelled around Wales. I always remember my debut, when scoring on my debut away to Austria. But I think my last game was my happiest and worst, because it was my last game. I knew I was retiring. I never expected to be on the pitch. I'd had a bad injury. Mark Hughes put me on the pitch the last couple of minutes. We beat Germany 1-0. In front of the 75,000 at the Millennium, and that was, I never expected to be on the bench, and I was delighted to be on the bench because I knew I was going to retire afterwards. And then with 2 minutes to go, Sparky put me on the pitch, and that was, I can't describe to you the feeling of having that one last taste of it. So it was an unbelievable high, and then it was an unbelievable low, because I knew that would be the end of it, but probably that.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show today, Chris. We're just about out of time now. Massive thanks to you and to Ingrid Hughes, who's come up with us today. You can find today's show and all our shows on our Audio Booth site, on Facebook, on our Facebook page, or if you search at Newtown AFC on Twitter, you'll get all the latest shows. So a massive thanks to Chris, and from everyone here and myself at Latham Park, have a very good evening.